You are about to participate in the most ambitious culinary experiment ever imagined.
This competition is going to test everything.
Adapt quickly to anything. I mean anything. The wildest day of your life starts right now.
All new 24 and 24 Last Chef Standing. Sunday night at 8 on Food Network. Stream on Max.
Welcome to The Watching Dead, the officially unofficial podcast for The Walking Dead on AMC. I'm Jim.
I'm Aaron.
And today we're talking about Season 10. I don't want to say Season 10. I want to say we're talking about the first of the bonus episodes that are happening because of the pandemic. They don't want me to call it Season 10. Amazon does, though. When I watch it on Amazon, it's like Season 10, Episode 17, Home Sweet Home.
Yeah, most of the places are covering this as if it is still a part of Season 10, because it's certainly not Season 11.
No, definitely not.
But yeah, this transitional season from the Whisperer's arc to what I presume is going to be the Reapers is going to be the new post-apocalyptic threat.
Apparently. Yeah, when all the threats in the Alexandria area have been eliminated, what do? You drag some threats out from afar.
You do. Gotta squeeze this group of survivors from both ends of the tube.
Yeah.
So you just can't dispense any of it. What'd you think of the first, bonus episode of The Walking Dead?
I mostly liked it. I don't know. I'm settling into whatever the hell these bonus episodes are going to be. And just like being back with Maggie was a little jarring. I liked it, but at the same time, I haven't quite found my feet on these things. And I don't know if I will, if they're going to jump around to different characters and micro stories here, but we'll see.
Yeah. I had tempered my expectations when I heard their bonus episodes that they were doing under COVID restrictions. I was like, oh, well, we're probably not going to get any new plot. This is going to be digressions and backstories and things like of that nature. And I guess I was a little impressed because this does feel like a next season plot. Mm-hmm. Like, in fact, I started thinking, I wonder if the production hadn't shut down and they had to do more filming, I think that Maggie was just shoved into the last episode in a very kind of haphazard way. And now they're actually bringing her in and like dealing with the questions that we had, like, well, what the fuck happened to Georgie and the twins and the project for the new future and all that. We get all these questions, like some things I thought they might drag on to ridiculousness. Like, what's the deal with Casey Jones here? Does he have a face? Is he a mutant?
Yeah.
Was he horribly disfigured? What the fuck is going on with them? They're like starting to answer that question. Although, again, not to put too fine a point on it, he's a ridiculous character.
Completely. But so was Michonne, right? When we first met her. So,
I mean, Michonne, I guess a little bit, especially when she's in her full with zombie entourage and poncho kind of thing. But underneath that, she's just a regular ass woman. This guy, I'm gratified to see, is just a regular ass dude. Mm-hmm. So like he's got some kind of emotional trauma or something, or maybe he's just he's wearing it like the Dread Pirate Roberts. He just thinks the masks are terribly comfortable and everyone will be wearing them in the future. He's ahead of the pandemic curve.
I don't know. There was an interesting scene there with him and Kelly, but we'll get there.
He's N95 underneath all that. So he's safe. He's not taking any chances.
Sure.
But I will say that like the first 20 minutes or first 15 minutes, this episode, the first about third, I'm like, oh, God, this is just old Walking Dead when they didn't have a budget and they'd run out and they're just walking in the woods, man. They're going to walk in the woods and there's going to be thrilling stealth zombies and that kind of stuff. And like, oh, this Casey Jones guy is a real freak. And there's a lot of like, they're just going to pretend like we don't know shit that we know. But then I feel like the episode really started getting going. They're still just kind of running around the middle of the woods, but they dressed up a little bit of a set and gave us a little bit of terrain. And some shots in Alexandria
with a little more going on at the end.
Yep. Yep. So I think that it feels to me like they shot probably an episode's worth of the big crew together, socially distanced in the outside walls of, like, they got all this stuff that they got a nucleus for, and then they're going to revolve like two or three people around the story. Because that's the only thing that kind of makes sense from what I could tell. But I will say that, like, a lot of people talked up these episodes, so I was expecting a little bit more than what I got out of this. I was expecting a little bit more kind of like backstory and character development, and not as much as walking through the woods of Georgia. Mm-hmm. So then again, like, I don't think that people were really praising this episode. It was some of the later ones, some of the middle episodes. So I guess I was whelmed. Yeah. I was whelmed by this episode.
I think there's a Negan episode that people like.
That's the last one that's the one I'm really excited to see.
Same here. Yeah. But this one was pretty good. My complaints aren't really complaints. My complaints are more like, boy, this show is ridiculous at times. And this is an example of that, which happens near the end of this episode. I'll talk about that when we get there. But yeah, overall, not bad for an episode, created under duress.
Got
not bad.
Before we get to the episode proper, I want to talk about some like true show notes type of things. When we were messing around with the stereo app, during our catch up of season 10, we're not quite caught up, but we have arrived at the year 2021 of our Lord. This content is the freshest. It hasn't even passed its expiration date. And we are 6 weeks away from The Walking Dead coming back and returning with the all new season 11. We're very excited about that. But we were playing around this stereo app to kind of do instant feedback for some of these. You heard it if you heard our podcast. And unfortunately, we're unable to make a deal with the stereo people to continue doing that for the new season. So we are reverting back to right now, just the Watching Dead at baldmove.com for feedback. We have a new Discord, which gives us some capabilities if we started wanting to do like instant takes and if we start doing live stuff on Twitch or stuff. But like, I don't want to commit to anything because we haven't quite figured that out. So we're still debating like exactly what kind of coverage we want to give. We think we're pretty sure we're going to do like a full episode and a feedback episode to kind of like split the load a little bit, but we'll see, because we also got to figure out what to do with Sci-Fi Sunday, if we're going to start doing instant takes or like a live watch, is zombie science fiction, like there's some things to discuss about. So we'll see, but we are excited to do season 11. It seems like it's all but confirmed that we're going to get 8 episodes, that they're going to last from August to October. And then they're going to go away, probably come back early next year, I would guess, like February through spring run, and then back to the August to October to kind of wrap things up. And that feels right. Wrapping up The Walking Dead at or near Halloween of 2022 feels pretty fucking good. I like that. Yeah. I like Walking Dead in that area of the year. So. Did I miss anything? Did I misstate anything?
No, we'll have more information as we get closer to season 11, of course. Fill you guys in.
Yeah, but we just want to make sure that because we got a couple. The stereo stuff is starting to work, but it's just not going to work after the new season. So we're back to email. watchingdead@baldmove.com.
All right, let's take a quick break and then we'll get into the recap.
The Vietnam War, it's over.
Your job's just begun.
A new HBO original limited series.
Welcome to the world of spycraft. Strap in.
From executive producers Park Chan-wook and Robert Downey Jr.
What are you concealing?
Based on the Pulitzer Prize-winning novel by Viet Thanh Nguyen.
What if I told you that I was a communist spy?
How did you become this?
The Sympathizer, streaming April 14th on Max. Subscription required.
Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
So we start off with Maggie and Judith out walking in the woods, just chatting it up, killing zombies together. And they come back to the road where Maggie sees, her nemesis Negan has been freed, and she storms off.
Yeah, she can't even believe it. She's just like, what the shit? It's too much for me to bear, you being in prison for life, and now you're just walking around like some kind of free man.
Yeah, it was good seeing Maggie again, like actually seeing Maggie, right? Not just one shot of her coming back with a freak show in the background.
But right.
Seeing Maggie doing Maggie stuff. There's something different about her in this episode. There's a hardness.
She's got the country. There's that. She has got like a very hard cast to her face and eyes. She looks world weary. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And I don't know if that's like makeup, if that's acting, if that's unintended, perhaps on this show. Who knows? But yeah, there's definitely something else there.
I also continue to really love the country western or more western vibe that they're giving this show. Like this feels very frontier town. It feels like there's a little bit of like hillbilly Lord of the Rings music when they're doing the big walkabout of Georgia. I like that aesthetic, and I think it suits this world really well. And Maggie having this kind of medicine, Dr. Quinn, Maggie woman, bowler hat kind of duster combo. I think it's cool.
Yeah.
It doesn't really jive with the Princess and Casey Jones. But I like it. Yeah, I like it.
Yeah, they're hat twins here, kind of. So then Daryl and Carol are talking to some of the other communities, we find out, to try and see where they can place all the dislocated hilltop survivors. Maggie introduces them to her friends, which we find out are Elijah and Cole. I'm sure we'll never use Casey Jones' real name again, but it's Elijah in case anyone was wondering.
If you lose the mask, you get the name. You're going to be Casey as long as you're wearing the mask. So Elijah, if that gives you a little bit. And Cole, you're just a generic dude.
You are a
daytime soap star. And I've already forgotten his name.
I think it's Sawyer. I think it's Sawyer. Or it might be Jesus. I don't remember.
Jesus 2.0. There you go. The updated the Jesus USB standard. It can carry twice as much bandwidth and karate kicks, and this is it. You're looking at it.
But she tells him, hey, you're coming to live with us at Hilltop, which gets awkward, real fucking awkward. And they have to show Maggie what happened to Hilltop. By the way, Carol let Negan out. She needs that information too right now. There's just a lot of shit happening to Maggie all at once here.
But also, like, you can see like some big pieces, like the way they play the reveal where Daryl's trying to explain and I think this happens later on, but she's like, yeah, I get it. Carol did something she thought she had to do. You know, like this is like the 17th time that Carol has taken the bull by the fucking horns, whether the bull wants it or not, whether the bull is in fact a bull with horns, she's just going to grab and start yanking.
Yeah,
she gets it. Also, I thought they portrayed Hilltop as devastated, but not destroyed.
Right.
Like a substantial part of the mansion is still intact. The walls, like, yeah, they're scorched, but like, I think you could make something out of that. Like, I wonder if part of Maggie's reclamation into the group will be rehabilitating Hilltop, because like they're talking about, well, there's not enough space for people to go. I mean, come on, you know, like it'll take a while to get back, but you're just going to give up on Hilltop, all that farmland.
The Whisperers also had like pockets full of salt, and as they marched in, they were just dropping salt all over the ground.
Those, man, they're smart, smart for Whisperers.
They play the long game for sure. Death by a thousand grains is what they call it.
Yep. They're calling the Hilltop New Carthage now.
So then Daryl goes off with Maggie to try and smooth things over because she storms off again. She's constantly storming off in this episode.
Storming Maggie. Yeah, Green is what they call her.
Yeah, it's good.
Also, I love how catty Carol is, because she says Negan is a reason we didn't lose everything.
Mm-hmm.
not like the one that took the most risk and the craziest mission. And you know, he's just one of the many reasons.
Because it was her idea.
Contributing reason. It's my idea. I executed. Yeah. I put this thing together. But Negan's in there. He gets a little credit, you know, a little. Just like I just love the fact that like Kara just used Negan.
Yeah.
And it's kind of glorious. In fact, she's never really. I think that Negan still might be kind of hanging out the periphery because Carol hasn't given permission to come back.
Mm-hmm.
It's like she's out with us. She's still out walking, guys. I don't want to rush her or nothing, you know. But I'd like to sleep on a bed in a bed again, you know, with a roof over my head at some point. You think that can happen?
No, you sleep in the shed. If the roof's leaking, it's your fault. It's your job to fix it.
Yeah, you didn't even really kill Beta, like the zombies did it. So like, don't even try to credit that, you know. Mm-hmm. Like, yeah, sure.
Then Kelly finds Daryl in the woods. You know, Daryl goes off after Maggie. Kelly goes off after Daryl. Wants to go with him to keep an eye out for Connie, and he agrees. So Maggie and Daryl's group walks around for a while until Cole decides, hey, we need to find shelter. So they hole up in.
Can I ask you something? Because yeah. I think they established that they're actually going back to meet up with the Maggie stragglers. But I don't think they ever say that.
They don't.
They just take off. Thank you. They just take off fucking walking. And I'm like, where the hell are we going? And I figured it out by context. But like, I watched this thing twice and I don't think they ever established that like directly that my people are back. They talk about a village that was destroyed and they're mm-hmm. running from it. But like that might you just have to make some assumptions here. A little messy the first 15 minutes or so of this episode.
It sure was. I was pretty confused when suddenly her group shows up. I'm like, oh, I thought your group was just it was Casey Jones and Cole.
Right. And there's like this and there's hella walking this episode. Like there's a whole like minute long thing with, like I said, hillbilly Lord of the Rings walking music going. Daryl is showing Kelly how to track, or maybe just the natural beauty of a praying mantis. I'm not exactly sure what they're. Mm-hmm. And Casey Jones with Casey Kasem is just hanging out in the background always with these weird serrated sighs and his fucking mask and his out of place kind of future Into the Badlands. I think they got that wholesale from Into the Badlands, his whole setup.
They might have.
It was going cheap when that thing got canceled. So, or is it still running? Oh my God, which is more horrifying? That it got canceled 3 years ago and no one knew, or that it's still running and no one
that
knows.
It's still running. I don't know. People like that show. I watched a couple episodes.
True.
It was cool. I don't know.
Yeah. Yeah.
Not bad. So yeah, they hole up in, I don't know that if they're like right now we're dealing with a global shipping container shortage. I think this is the reason, because they had half the world's shipping container supply just out here in the middle of the woods. What is this place?
Fenced up. It's a cargo container.
An
depot
outdoor warehouse
in the middle of the woods.
The fuck is this thing? I don't know. It's whatever they could cobble together with eight people and a crane in COVID times, I guess.
Like, you know, when they built this place pre zombie apocalypse, they're like, okay, no foot traffic, but the cost per square foot for storing is just can't be beat in the middle of the fucking woods here.
We'll have to get a fucking Apache to airlift this thing out if we ever want
to
get
30 miles
our
of gravel
DVD
road
players.
To get to the site, but like it's like you know, 10 cents a square foot, man. Where can you get prices like this?
Also, fuck, we'll stack them eight high. Who gives a shit? They fall over.
There's no laws. There's no rules here.
Now, let me ask you this: if a tower of shipping containers falls over in the woods and no one's around to hear it, did it actually fall over? Not according to the profit and loss statement. All right. I was gonna say
somehow it's Ever Given's fault.
Who?
The cargo ship in the Suez Canal is trying
right.
Making a joke, making a pandemic joke, tail end the pandemic joke. We remember that when it happened, right? It was all fun.
I do.
It is funny. It's funny when billions are lost internationally over an oopsie.
Right. So yeah, they hole up there after clearing a parking lot's worth of walkers. I don't know what Kelly is talking about with this parking lot. There's not a bit of pavement to be found anywhere. There's, as far as I can tell, just haphazard placement of these containers. This is not a parking lot by any stretch of the imagination.
The only way it's a parking lot is if it's like the Morgan County Fairground parking lot, you know, and like
when half of it is like hog shelter.
When it's literally just a field 90% of the year, but like that when the fucking fair's running, then you got to have a cornfield to park people in.
True.
Yeah, rural Georgia County Fair parking lot is what this is.
Okay, I'll take her word for it. Maggie gets cut in the process, which doesn't actually come back at all. There's no point in doing this. They just do it.
Dude, I thought like when the way that Jesus 2.0 is smirked and's like, no sweat. I'm like, oh, there we're going to step back and we're going to see Maggie's group fucking put on a show. Like Casey Jones is going to like go in the cowabunga mode. He's going to eat a pizza and kill a turtle. Jesus 2.0 is going to, you know, do a roundhouse kick.
Yeah.
Maggie's going to do a 2-bit Daryl Dixon, 2 Bowie knife combination. And just, it's going to be a whirling dervish mode. No. It was kind of lame zombie violence that led up to like them slamming the door of a container shut on a zombie's head, which was cool, but kind of nonsensical.
And played out. They've done that a bunch with the head smashing.
Yeah, and it's not as exciting when that thing goes on for 30 seconds of like, oh, let's show Maggie grunting, and let's show the door inching closer, and let's show the zombie defiantly snarling, and you know, plus it's like there was like 17 pairs of hands sticking in that gap.
Mm-hmm.
And suddenly it's just one soft zombie skull. I'm like, was there like Daryl was like smacking the zombie hands back so they like, and I don't know.
Yeah,
I don't know physically. Oh, he's just hacking them away. I don't know how physically it works to shut the door on 16 zombies that are jamming their limbs into the doorframe. But it did.
I don't know. It did.
It's dumb. Yeah, like we need to retire the zombie getting their head shut in a door. Or if you just want to make it like a quick half second shot to just like add to the awesomeness. But like it can't be a centerpiece. Come on. Mm-hmm. This is season 10. Late season 10. Act like you've been there.
It's pandemic season 10. It's tough. I don't want to give them too much shit.
You're a returning alumnus, Maggie Green. You need to fucking show that you've been around the block. This duster's doing a lot of work, but we need to see you doing some really awesome kills.
Yeah. So I guess, did we see that Maggie was hopefully not shitty bow girl now? In the previous episode, or was this like a revelation here that she's now the bow girl?
She's the shittiest. Her archery form is terrible. She's got the full four finger draw, which is not how you draw a bow back. I don't know where the archery consultant is sitting there in the sidelines with his hand in his head and be like, I was just here for crossbows and now you got me trying to do bow. I don't know, but it's not cool. Not cool what they're doing. Not quite Legolas level archery here.
All right. So Maggie's nursing her wound inside one of these shipping containers as she talks with Daryl about what she got up to while she was gone. They apparently had trouble with some other groups. Georgie left to go teach a larger group how to rebuild. They were kind of stationed around Knoxville for a while. And she went to her Nana's place by the ocean for a while, where Hersha really liked it. But she had to explain to him how Glenn died, which was unpleasant. And that dude is still out there living a life. And then Daryl decides, I'm just going to leave you alone for a while.
This reminds me of the story of her taking her back to her Nana's oceanside cottage. Reminds me of the part of the plot in The Last of Us 2 where like Ellie and her girlfriend goes off with their baby and kind of like raises it in idyllic far from zombies setting. Like I close my eyes and imagine Maggie and Herschel doing that. And it was kind of cool.
Mm-hmm.
Do you think that the timeline jives with what we know? Because I felt like in early season 10, Jesus, before he died, was talking about getting a letter from Maggie and, you know, talking about moving with Georgie and stuff. And that, I think, at the start of the Whisperer's arc was much less than the several years that Maggie is laying out here.
Yeah, that all happens over the course of like one winter cycle, right?
Yeah. 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 You've got fall, then winter, and then spring and summer and the fight. Like it's happened all within a year's time.
Mm-hmm.
So I felt like they fucked up the timeline a little bit. But it could be that, like, I don't know, maybe Georgie lost, like, because I always thought that Georgie was in a large, well-equipped outfit, but it sounds like she was just kind of doing a Johnny Appleseed of civilization. Just like, yeah. Hey, you got a settlement here? You got a forge? You got a forge? Here. Mm-hmm. Here's how you set up a forge. You need to redirect that rivers for clean. Here's how you build a dam. Like, and like once she got to like windmill technology, she's on to the next little burg, selling her monorails and smithing.
And then all those places just crumble and fall apart as soon as she leaves, apparently. I don't know.
Yeah, it's like something always goes. I mean, I guess mm-hmm. that's the story of this show is like, you know, it's hard to restart civilization. And I don't know if I agree with that thesis, but it's certainly the reality of this universe, like something like either mm-hmm. an internal threat or an external one arises and everything goes bad. Sometimes combinations of the two. So that's dour. Like I was really hoping that there was some kind of, you know, power in the world. And they do that to the white stormtroopers. We mm-hmm. haven't forgotten about those. There is something like that, but they're not connected to Maggie and Georgie at all, apparently, because they're just still trying to get fucking Bronze Age shit to work.
Well, I think Georgie went out west because she heard about somebody like that, right? Like larger group.
Yeah. I thought I wrote this down. Yeah, she heard about this city out west, and her and the twins went to check it out. City implies something a little like you wouldn't call Alexandria a city, wouldn't call Hilltop a city.
So that settlement, implies, maybe.
Yeah, that implies a certain level of sophistication.
But
so
why
maybe
would Georgie Appleseed go there? If she's like the technology planter, why go to a city that presumably already has a bunch of infrastructure set up?
I feel like if you're a Johnny Technoseed and you heard about a place that's like a mecca for that kind of stuff, you might want to like pop in and be like, hey, how can our, you know, our purposes, assuming they're good, they're benevolent, like how can our purposes suit? Like instead of taking the, you know, maybe I can start taking microchip stuff to people instead of just the iron forges and whatnot. So yeah, I feel like, yeah, if you met someone that's trying to that you're trying to rekindle civilization, you met someplace that civilization's been successfully rekindled, like hooking up with those people makes sense. But it sounds like it went badly for everyone involved because Maggie's lost track of Georgie. Maggie lost it is like also not a convincing answer for why like Maggie, you know, just turned her back on the community because she's like, well, I wasn't around the box for a while. And then when I was, I'm just like,
yeah, was it to keep her, you know, promise to Glenn or whatever it was that they'd go up to the beach house? Was it just so Herschel could see that place?
That seems like something she did in lieu of like following Georgie after the last thing fell apart. I don't know. Like even like I thought that she came home as a response to hearing about all the, but it seems like she made a decision to come home and then found her box and came, you know, caught up with recent events, not including Hilltop being destroyed. So I don't know. It gave us a lot of answers about what Maggie's doing. I'm sure they've got some other stuff coming out, but I did think there was some stuff here where, you know, Maggie starts to detail what happened with her last group and she just trails off and says, I can't. And I put in my notes, well, the writers don't know.
Yeah, they haven't actually figured anything.
No, they haven't figured out exactly what the hell Maggie's been up to since she's been, you know, trying to get another show off the ground on another network. And they're giving a lot of hard thought, but they're not ready to come. They're not ready to commit.
They're waiting to see how much AMC is going to cut their casting budget this year on the final season. So they know how many survivors came from her group and all that stuff, how many they need to kill this episode. Yeah.
I've been watching a little Mythic Quest in the background, and this has got big Mask Man energy. Oh, we've known about the identity of the Mask Man for years. We're just waiting for the opportunity to get behind closed doors. Jesus Christ, who is the Mask Man? We're going to die if we don't. Yeah, this is Maggie Green's entire last 3-year history. No, it's just a Mask Man.
Mm-hmm. The next morning, Kelly. Jesus Christ, Kelly abandons her watch to go look for Connie. She finds an old truck with a jacket on it, and then Maggie and Daryl find her and yell at her, and she's super sorry. Fuck you, Kelly. Good God. How many times has she done this, right? She constantly is just fucking things up because she's impulsive. I guess.
She's part of the new group that's kind of like, fuck up. I assume they're all fuck ups until they've been prop. But like, yeah, this is, and they say like, oh, she's looking for a sister, like that. matters.
Imagine how much sadder you'd be if you didn't find your sister and you got your group of friends killed.
Yeah, and Maggie knows all about, like, when you lose your sister. And the strategy is you act like you don't fucking care. You act like you don't fucking care at all. It's like there's you got all the time in the world to get back to her until you find
out
she's dead.
And
then you go for broke, falling to your knees and screaming into the heavens. That's how you handle your sister being lost, Kelly. Come on.
Right.
Come on. But yeah, no, I can't, like, I thought even the show was kind of like staring at it, like, you know, when Maggie was like, what the fuck, man? And the show's like, well, you know, you kind of had it coming to you. Daryl's like, she lost her sister. I would love for, I feel like this episode would be a whole letter grade better. If you say this is like a C minus or whatever, it'd be a B minus. If Maggie had just been like, you know, had said drop some realness about losing your sister and like how you act when you lose your sister and shit, like, oh, really? What's it like to lose your sister, Daryl? I can't fucking imagine what it'd be like to lose your sister and be terrified for her safety and find out she's dead. What must that be like? I guess you just abandon all your fucking responsibilities when something like that happens, huh, Daryl? Like, yeah, like they could have had some kind of knowledge of the show's own history there. But yeah, Kelly, come on. Kelly's no Connie.
It makes me angry because it didn't need to happen, right? It's like something, if Kelly had just said, hey, I really want to go look for my sister, everybody in this group understands. Everybody.
Just wake him up. Yeah, I just
got to
leave.
Wake one person
like,
up and say, can you please take watch?
Yeah, like fucking Daryl, what's he sleep, 90 minutes a night? Like, yeah, just, right. just come within 30 feet of him. He'll be wide awake with his knives out. Be
right,
like, hey,
he
man.
Can sleep
I just...
and keep watch. There's nothing Daryl can't do.
Yeah, like Daryl's just as invested. Although I thought Daryl was weirdly kind of blasé about Connie.
Mm-hmm.
And this, you know, maybe that's just the way you got to be when it's like, well, missing yeah. persons report. If they've been gone 72 hours in the zombie apocalypse. Ugh. Last seen at the site of underground cave explosion. Ugh. It's
yeah,
looking pretty bad.
He might be losing hope.
Yeah,
but we'll see. So the group walks a bunch more and then they find some smoke. Which, boy, this is confusing. This is the scene where you're like, oh, there's a group. What? Cole freaks out saying they found us. Two of their other people died in a Reaper attack, I guess, is what they're saying. It probably is Reapers. And the rest are missing. And they decide we're gonna track our people north.
There's an entertaining exchange here right before they see the smoke between Daryl and Maggie, where she's like, you know, Herschel always said that the wound's got to touch air before it can heal. And Daryl thinks about him and he's like, you know, that's not right. Like medicine wise, mm-hmm. you're supposed to keep things bandaged and, you know, stuff like that for proper. I thought that was a nice little, they didn't do anything with it, but it's just kind of like, I like that Daryl knows better and is kind of like, you know,
yeah, it's
underlying. Poking. If the underlying metaphor is busted, mm-hmm. then what the fuck are you going to, you know, like, well, what is this? It's like, you know what they always say? The sky's red. Okay.
Sure.
Sky's red, yeah. So you better have bread. That's what they say. You know.
Oftentimes, those folksy sayings have like a lot of truth to them, like intuitive sure. Truth to them. But this is not one of them. Herschel,
no,
may have invented a few things, made a few leaps, let's say.
Yeah, I think now I'm wondering if they're like this is an explicit metaphor they're trying to make with Casey Jones. Like he's got damage.
Oh boy,
he's all
and
covered
the mask
up,
is a bandage.
But it's not going to heal until like someone takes a human interest in him.
Sure.
I don't know. Cause like that's like they're yeah, it's something like you get I think that's what they're going for. It's a really tortured metaphor though.
Mm-hmm. As they point
we'll
out.
We'll see.
So eventually those tracks
rare the writing room Civil War bust out into the screen. Like you can't say that shit. It's stupid. Now I'm going to say it. I just typed it. What are you going to do?
Give me a coffee intern. Eventually the tracks split for their people. And Daryl suggests they split up the group, which was kind of shocking. Mm-hmm. Maggie and Daryl head off together, which is extra shocking because that forces Kelly to go with these nameless, faceless strangers who does it make any sense for the two groups of people who've been working and communicating and fighting together for years to split up and divide themselves like this? You send Maggie with her people, right? And you send Daryl with his people because they know how to communicate and work together more effectively. Like, it was shocking to me that they split the group this way. And it obviously was for writing reasons.
I think that because I was trying to make this because like, yeah, splitting the party is usually a bad deal. And I think they're explicitly saying that this is a little bit selfish of Maggie, because like if it wasn't for her suddenly, you know, losing track of Herschel, because like, you know, like they had this little kid's footprints and all the other footprints and Daryl's tracking it. And here's where they split. And he's like, well, they might have carried him, you know. They kind of explicitly make it Maggie be like, I know this isn't the right thing to do, but I need to find Herschel as soon as possible. So we're going to split. And that's her going with Daryl, where it's like, OK, because like I think Fake Jesus 2.0 made the kind of like, oh, you're going to split our fucking party. You're going to do every novice D&D mistake. And she's like, well, me and Daryl will take all the risk. You guys got Casey Jones and Jesus 2.0 and Kelly, and so don't they have like one or two other people? So like you got the majority
of shitless of the Reapers. Like the Reapers are like this boogeyman threat that is like almost superhuman in their eyes.
I saw Firefly the movie. They're bad news, these Reapers. I don't know how they're going to stand against these techno barbarians. It's all all bad.
I just thought it was insane to split the party this way. And then Maskface.
No, it is.
Gets so scared that Kelly has him take off his mask for a little pep talk. That doesn't seem like a badass, but I guess what they're doing here is really fortifying the unspoken reputation of the Reapers, right? Like if this lunatic with two big knives and a mask is afraid of them to the point where he's shitting himself,
like,
and weeping
fighter and yeah,
then you're probably meant to take them seriously. So that was pretty effective.
Did you think that when they were building up what was underneath this mask, it was going to be something? Like, I was thinking, like, he's hideously deformed, he's scarred, he might be a mutant. And then I'm thinking, oh, what if they're going to do something at the close of the series, kind of like Ellie from The Last of Us, where it's like they found one person he's got a zombie bite. But they've been keeping it hidden under all this because blah, 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 he's immune. And like, what does that mean? We can get him back to Georgie City, blah, blah. No. He's just a regular dude.
I thought he was going to be a famous country western singer. A second one.
I know. I just thought, I was like, yeah, it's like it's just purely a metaphor for apparently psychological or emotional distress and wounds.
Yeah.
So I don't know. We'll see.
It's the masks that we all wear, Aaron. I don't know if you watched the previous season. There was a lot of mask shit in there.
I didn't pick it up. I didn't pick up the obvious utility of mask as a metaphor.
Maybe you'll get it for the 15th episode where they do it. Mm. We'll see. Daryl takes a hostage. It's one of Maggie's people. They say, oh, the Reapers did it, but we didn't actually see the Reapers. And then dude takes an arrow to the neck and they all run while being shot at. It stop me when you want to stop here, but another one of Maggie's people gets shot, goes down, and then another one goes to help her. She gets shot. There's a lot of people dying here. And Maggie goes around to flank this guy, the shooter, which they deduce there's only one of them, but gets ambushed by him. Daryl comes to save her. He gets knocked out. Then Maggie frees herself. Her friends come into the rescue. And she asks the guy, why'd you do this? And he says, because Pope marked you. And then he full on detonates himself with a grenade. And I love this sequence is probably the most ridiculous thing I've seen in The Walking Dead since the Renaissance Festival or the fucking light bulb incident with the projector. Like, this is not how grenades work.
I was going to say, which is the ridiculous part? Because there's a couple.
So the guy says, Pope marks you. He pulls the pin and he laughs. And then Maggie yells, get down, and everybody in the group standing 2 feet away from this guy with weapons drawn.
They're within arm's distance, yeah.
Right. Just turns their back and ducks. What does
Unless
that do?
This grenade was up the guy's ass when he pulled the pin.
Right.
Someone is going to die. Yeah, the shrapnel is going to hit somebody that close.
And the sound effect they use, the jet, I don't know if Greg Nicotero was there with a giant jar of jelly just sticking his hands in, going,
dude.
And it goes on for like 10 seconds. This guy's body is exploding into goo.
It's the squishiest, glorpiest grenade explosion I've ever heard. And I've been watching Pacific War right. and my evenings. It's like, it's
so good,
really,
though.
Really, really squishy.
It's so stupid.
Did Nick
Terry
direct this episode?
No, I don't think so.
Okay, I might look that up because like there, that would, you know, there was a couple of like little kind of like incurious decisions made here that like it might have been.
Maybe.
So the interesting thing about this is silenced gunshots. I thought that's interesting. It shows like if this guy is one of these Reapers. It shows that they're a little bit more supplied and sophisticated than the average level of sophisticated survivors, because I would put Alexander up there with anybody, but they've run out of bullets a hell of a long time ago. Silenced weapons.
True.
I thought that they had an opportunity to build some tension, especially since there's so many much wasted time. There's 2-3 minutes of just people walking through woods in this episode. Mm-hmm. They could have really set up an ambush. Where like Daryl like keeping the guy pinned down or interested by like, you know, trying to draw shots and like Maggie going out wide. But she's like, I'm going to ambush him or I'm going to flank him. And she just walks straight ahead to the camera. The camera pivots 180 degrees to her finding the sniper nest. Is that how you fucking ambush anybody? What the shit? You're not going to flank anybody that way. Also, why does this guy abandon his position with the gun?
Did he think he got everybody? He shouldn't have, right?
There's no way, because he was still shooting at Daryl and he didn't hit anything. And there was another, like, did this guy not know? No, I just think that, like, they wanted him to do the shocking thing of suicide bombing the group. Mm-hmm. They didn't want to kill. Like, that's the other thing they could have. They could have just killed Jesus 2.0.
Yeah, they already killed the other two people. Of them.
Yeah, just like, yeah, like keep hot rainbow shirt girl around for one scene and have her get blown apart by this dude. But like, it was ridiculous the way this, especially since this guy was a like an intimidating person. I was really strapped into like, again, I want to be impressed by Maggie Green fighting this guy. And he kind of just handles her and Daryl, which is the other shocking thing.
Very satisfying fashion. This is. When he grabs Daryl and he swings him and bashes him into the tree to knock him out, that is straight out of
disarming
like,
him.
The Friday the 13th. There's a scene in Friday the 13th where Jason picks somebody up in a sleeping bag and bashes him against a tree and kills him. And I was just thinking, oh, this is an homage to that.
Daryl Dixon, the man who 1v'd one a tank some seasons ago, is just completely handled like a child by this man.
Yeah.
And then he gets blown up. But I am sitting up straight and taking the Reapers seriously as potential threats, because this guy was terrifying and he's just a foot soldier, apparently.
Well, I might not if Pope turns out to be Pope from Falling Skies. I don't know if you remember that guy, but
I was going to ask whether it's Jude Law or John Malkovich.
OK, know,
which Pope are we dealing with? It's really going to change my opinion on the threat level.
For sure.
Who's the Pope? What are they wearing?
The other thing in this scene that is absolutely hilarious to me is not only does this, you know, grenade not work like a grenade, but then they turn around. This whole thing has been in search of like the group and Herschel, right? And then they turn around and Herschel has just had a bird's eye view of a man turning into jelly. And he is so fucking cheerful. He's like, hey, mom, it's great up here. I loved what I just saw.
Also,
and it sucked. It really fucking sucked that they just found Herschel. It's just like, oh, yeah, he's just sitting in a tree somewhere.
Seeing she's doing the same Lori job, like of raising a child to where like no one keeps track of him. He's just up a tree witnessing grenade explosions. He's not in like this the inner circle of an adult ring of adults is protecting him, actively being hunted by the Reapers. This isn't peacetime either.
No.
He's just fucking climbing trees out there. No adult supervision. Jesus Christ. I don't know.
And then they just stumble on him, too. Sucks. It's not like they had this hard fought battle to find him. It's just like there was a sniper and the sniper killed himself. And then there's Herschel.
Maybe he ran out of bullets and that's why I did it. Did you know that snares work that way, too? That like when you step in a snare, it pulls you backwards 40 feet. Before it pulls you up like 1 foot.
If the tree is like 50 feet tall and the the counterweight is up at the top. Maybe it could do that, but why? Why?
I thought the only reason is because, like, if he just worked like a normal snare, Maggie gets gutted.
Yeah, he's
like,
on her.
She has to be pulled, like, away from the guy or the attacker, as he's listed in the credits. Or it's just a even... So there is a little... And then maybe this is just because they couldn't have... you know, this was all kind of rush stuff, and they put stuff together. But, like, there was a little bit of the regression to the stupid staging of events and actions without a thought of, like, a logical plan or space or distance or cover. And I think the show's been doing better on that. And I hope that they, when they get their shit together, I hope they can get back to that, because, man, there's nothing more boring or tedious to watch than a battle where you don't know what the hell's going on and you don't know why you should care.
Yeah, I do wonder, like, with the tracking stuff, if his intention was to pull them off course. It doesn't fucking matter. It doesn't matter. This episode doesn't care. Why should I? Why does
it's
he...
just all this do is establish the threat of the Reapers, and it does do
yeah.
that.
Yeah. Well, I'm looking at this. I'm going, okay, they took an entire fucking day. So they wake up, they notice that Kelly's missing. She's found searching a truck, like, almost immediately.
Yeah.
And then they find the bodies of their friends. And then they're led north by the tracks, all that stuff. And they have a battle with the sniper. And that takes all fucking day, because that, by the end of this scene, they're back in the shipping containers. Mm-hmm. So, like, they made zero progress that day. So I don't know if the sniper was, like, trying to lead them in a direction toward.
Once they found the camp and it had been ransacked and people are gone, there's no reason. Like, they're still far away from Alexandria. So why not just go to the nearby camp that is intact? So I think that made, like, yeah, like, you know, by the time they get fed and fire's going and...
Oh, yeah, I'm not saying it doesn't make sense. I'm saying, did the sniper lead them in a direction for a purpose, or did he just randomly fucking go north, you know?
Because he was driving them north, and there is, like, this concern, rightfully so, about, like, you know, we can't, like, we just led a bunch of people to this point. We didn't think anyone was following us. We got to make damn sure that we check before Alexandria. So, like, am I supposed to understand that they did that successfully because Daryl is such an expert tracker and anti-tracker? Or it seems like inevitably that the, you know, the Reapers are going to come to Alexandria.
Yeah, I mean, what's the point of introducing him if not?
But maybe it's supposed to give them, because, like, maybe it's supposed to give Alexander some time to have, like, say, five more bonus episodes of reinforcing the walls and, you know, before the Reapers show up, because they really gave him a slip, really gave him a left turn at Albuquerque situation. They're going to have to backtrack a little bit.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm interested to see what exactly this extra surprise was that the Whispers left that could devastate the fucking cold rolled bridge walls. Like they do, because I thought the Whispers were basically done last season, but here we are.
But the last episode they left, that was part of the gambit. The 15th episode, they left Alexandria wide open, and the Whispers came and, like,
out there with wrenches and dismantle half the wall.
Maybe, yeah. Like, I mean, they could, like, you know, use the hacksaw to cut down some of those cold rolled, or they could have set fire. They could have fucked up a lot of shit while they were there. I thought that was a really crazy risk to take.
It is
to just abandon but, like, you know, because what if they just burnt everything to the ground?
Yeah.
You know,
and suddenly
slash
Hilltop
solar
and
panel.
Alexandria are gone. Oceanside's not making up for that.
Now you're just camping, guys. And I remember the Walking Dead when it was endless camping, and it was not a good time. So,
and half you're going to die because you got no food. I mean, it's So
just
I
disrespecting Reg's cold rolled steel. I didn't like it. I didn't like it. Blatant disrespect.
So they're back in shipping containers, and Maggie asks Kelly about her sister, and Kelly does the same with her. Maggie says, I hope I get to meet Connie someday. Then Daryl pops his head in and tells Maggie, we'll hang out a while to make sure we're alone and then take the long way home so no one can follow. And he asks if she's coming home, and she says, yeah, but only really for the sake of my people. And she'll deal with Negan as it comes, essentially. Ominous.
Yeah, I thought it was weird that they're talking to sisters and she didn't say anything about Beth. Doodlebug not even referenced.
Certainly not. But I don't know.
Maybe it's a big bummer to, like, when someone's holding out hope and talking like their sister's still alive. You're like, well, my sister's dead. You're never going to meet her. Mm-hmm. She was a dumbass younger sister just like you. trusted Daryl to keep her safe, just like, you know.
I lived in a community a lot like the one we're taking you back
like
to.
This. Yeah. I don't know. I do wish that this sometimes a show would. It would, you know, you got Maggie coming back. She's been on the show for a long time. Lots of history. Like, she could instantly start building these relationships and stuff and making relevant connections. And they have this one-on-one conversation and they don't do it.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like an omission of real details on Beth is sort of the show acknowledging it, right? Like, she would not want to tell Kelly about this in this moment. Because, you said, know, emotionally it would devastate her even more.
And Maggie's different. Like, Maggie is definitely, like, got a harder edge. She's a little bit more, like, you know, she's got still got a soft spot for Herschel and, you know, her old people and stuff. But, like, she is a little bit gone down the Carol road, probably because she's been in a Rick position and it's gone to shit time and time again. That will wear on you as a leader. But, so maybe that is it. It's just like, I'm expecting Maggie to be Maggie and she's traumatized Maggie. She's like walls fully built up as the as hilltops fall, hers raise. that could be what they're going for. We'll see.
Then we get another walking montage of them heading home to Alexandria, where the town is rebuilding a section of the wall of the Whispers attacked. Maggie says, "We're home," as Negan looks on. This time, for God's sake, they finally got it right. This song was good. This song, it's not some shitty atonal pop song that, you know, doesn't mesh with the episode. This was good. This was perfect. I like this song.
Oh, it's a Leonard Cohen song. If any True Detective fan will tell you that his make a nice drop for dark, depressing shit that suits The Walking Dead. They got an Australian, they got an Aussie singer with a kind of slightly, not upbeat or downbeat, but slightly changed tempo. And I thought it worked really well. It like the lyrics, the somber, like, and also there's an aggression there. And Maggie's bringing, like, she's walking a fucking mean in this last slow motion, like looking and like a badass.
There's something unspoken here that, like, both of them are prepping for a fight. Like, you can see it even on Negan's face, right? Like, I don't think he wants one at all, but he knows that the fight's coming
to him, and he's
kind of stealing himself for it. And there's nothing spoken here, and it's kind of a great scene.
And we didn't talk about it, but I thought that in the beginning of the episode where he's like, "What do you do?" And Negan's like, "Hey, Maggie." And then she just walked, and he's like, "Oh, shit." Because, this is the, like, he's just getting in good. And now he's got to deal with the person who he personally wronged perhaps the most and disrespected the most, killed her husband in a brutal fashion. And she has not seen any of his late heroics, and she just has to fucking deal with it. Like, it's
got Hilltop destroyed as far as she's concerned. Yeah.
Plus, like, I don't know how I feel if I'm Negan, because, like, Daryl, in his conversation with Maggie, he's like, "Hey, you know, everything's up in the air with Negan. Like, we could fucking hang him right now. We could Gregory, we could do a Gregory special. I'm open to it, you know?" Like, goddamn. Like, again, like, I think that's something that they need to deal with. Like, what is The Walking Dead's mission statement on restorative and rehabilitative versus vengeance driven punishment? Because, like, I guess it would be kind of profound if, like, even Maggie can come around on Negan.
Yeah.
Where it's like, you know, I'm not saying I'm glad you did the things you did, but, like, you're a changed man. And also, I mean, that's just this Here's Negan episode that we're going to get. The final bonus is have to do a lot of heavy lifting of turning Negan from perhaps anti-hero to hero.
I like what they've done with this so far. We've talked a lot about how when people change themselves, it's not a linear, you know, thing. And I don't think other people appreciate maybe a change that's happened within a character's mind or heart until they demonstrate it over and over, right? That trust is so easy to break. And then, and Negan never had the fucking trust in the first place, right? It was antitrust. It was the opposite of that.
Right.
And for him to be able to establish trust with this group is going to be a Herculean effort. It's not going to be he saved Judith in a snowstorm once. It's not going to be he had a good time fucking around with Alpha for a while and then oops, lost a community in the process of killing her. It's going to have to be over and over that he demonstrates this, especially to people like, you know, Maggie, who doesn't have A, those experiences with him, but B, has a very personal negative experience with him. So, yeah, it's going to take the whole season, I think, to get Negan to a place, to get to that mission statement that you're talking about, whichever way it is.
Yeah, 100%. And I, like I said, I think it is interesting work because you're right. It's like, you know, if he's changed inside, how's he convinced the people that those changes are permanent and they're actually going to be something that there's a lot that you have to do. And also, like, maybe some of the things they say is like, you don't have to convince everyone. You just have to convince enough people. Like, you know, there's some people like, you wrong a person like Meg, she's never going to forgive you. And that's something you got to live with. There's a lot of interesting things they could say about that. And I think they've been doing a good job. And Jeffrey Dean Morgan's a good enough actor that, like, they can do that stuff with him. And yeah, and
so is Lauren Cohen. I mean, both are going to be real good this season.
Especially since they did, even last season, they showed they had that episode where Maggie, or no, it was Michonne that ate the apple that made her consider what it would be like if she hadn't fallen in with Rick and if she had turned into a savior. And if she, I think they've done a good job of showing how every person on this show, whether it's Morgan, whether it's Rick, whether it's Shane, whether it's Matt, like everyone could have gone to that dark place without the people that love them bringing them back, like, you know, Daryl. Everybody could have been that. So, like, I think I'm ready to forgive Negan, especially if he had some kind of like really crazy traumatic thing that caused him to kind of have a very skewed view on what protecting humanity looks like. But that doesn't mean Maggie's got to forgive him. So we'll see how it goes.
Yeah, I'm excited. I don't know if I'm excited for the next five episodes, these bonus ones, but I am excited for season 11, what they're going to do with that stuff.
I heard a lot of people talking them up. So
I've heard like people talking one or two of them lying. Up.
Yeah.
Yeah. Not all of them, certainly, but.
And I think that they're going to be limited because they're all going to be kind of self-contained but I honestly, they're already less self-contained than I thought they'd be because this directly continued the plot from the last episode, which is I didn't think was going to happen. So,
yeah,
we'll see. We'll see what happens. It's leading up to season 11. I hope it's good.
Yeah, we'll see. That's it for the episode.
On May 10th, Kingdom of the Planet of the Apes is coming to IMAX and theaters everywhere.
What a wonderful day!
This summer, one movie event will reign.
It is our time.
Apes hunt humans.
That is wrong. For your king.
Never.
Kingdom of the Planet of the Apes. Only in theaters May 10. Tickets on sale now. Rated PG-13. Some material may be inappropriate for children under 13.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's kazoo concert in Kansas City, go Kevin, or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
All right, let's get to the feedback section. WatchingDead@baldmove.com is how you send in. We're probably going to have, like I said, a dedicated feedback episode when we get into the real season and feedback picks up. But until that happens, especially since we kind of, you know, came up with a little fanfare, we got 6 weeks to build up to the new season. We'll probably just be reading emails as we get it. Now, if we start getting a bunch, then we might spin it off into a separate feedback, because I don't know if you noticed, we can talk a lot about The Walking Dead without anybody else helping. So if it gets to be like, you know, we're doing 90-minute pods, then we might split that off into a later in the week. But I think when the season hits, that's going to be the way to cover it. Like, you know, do a feedback roundup on Thursday and see how that goes. But we did have a piece of feedback from someone excited that we're covering The Walking Dead again. Lisa wrote in and said, "Oh, man, I have so enjoyed listening to the Bald Move podcast again. The last one I really listened to is The Expanse," which, you know, that's going back to the beginning of the year. "It's not that I don't love listening to you guys, but I need to be already watching a show to listen along." Well, I mean, yeah, for sure. We find that to be the case.
Yep.
Watching Dead has always been one of my favorites, but certainly not the only one. I've listened to your Mad Men, Leftovers, Game of Thrones, Expanse, Westworld. The list goes on. I dropped The Walking Dead about midway into season 8. Not even really a rage quit situation. I just kind of got bored. I eventually heard all the good things about Angela Kang and thought I would give it another shot, but kind of set on the fence. And then I saw you guys were renewing your Walking Dead podcast, and I knew immediately I was in. Knowing what I'd be hearing your takes alongside the ride made the idea of watching Walking Dead so much more appealing. Now I've just finished season 10 and finished the last episode. I was actually really sad because I thought you guys wouldn't be along for the remaining episodes. Then boom, it turns out you're doing them starting this July 13th today. Weirdly good timing for me. Well, I'm glad it worked out, Lisa. She continues, in brief, I didn't love seasons 9 and 10, but they didn't bore me. That's a fair... That's a fair way to put it. Like, they're not the best television, but they hold your attention now. This whole Kang has entirely revitalized the show line doesn't quite work for me, having seen them all now, but it's still definitely an improvement. The visual direction and a lot of the emotional notes were great, especially in season 9. The plot lines and some of the writing fell flat and were possibly the most nonsensical that Walking Dead has ever been into. I'd love to see your individual problems with it, because I'm not like I can definitely see why someone would say that, but I wonder what the particular stuff was. I've seen a few interviews with Kang, and I think she really gets a lot of inspiration from the comics, and stylistically it's very, very comic booky, which I like, and it kind of makes me overlook the plot holes. I'm watching this show as a comic book come to life, which works for me, and if a few things don't make logical sense, so be it. While I enjoyed these last two seasons, they were made infinitely better by your podcast, and oddly by your positivity. I kind of love the hate watch element of Watching Dead, but in this case it's nice to hear enthusiastic takes. Thank you for that. Looking forward to Watching Dead resuming in a few days, and for what it's worth, I similarly sat on the fence about Mad Men for years, and when I realized you guys had done a Mad Men watch years before, I knew I finally had to give it a go. Well, I appreciate you considering how much we improve your viewing experience, and I wouldn't get used to the relentless positivity. Those are two guys going... That was the result of two guys in a time without television latching on to some bit of nostalgia that had a bit of a resurgence. And if they go back to stealth zombies and endless woods walks, But the other thing is, like, I don't know, like, sometimes I feel like if they can just nail the character moments and give us some closure on some of these longstanding arcs about forgiveness and rehabilitation and moving forward, that's what I'm looking for. I'm not really looking for giant zombie set pieces. I'm not really looking for consistent day-night cycles. I just want to care about the characters themselves.
I'm looking for the day and night. I mean, this is baseline storytelling stuff. You got to get fundamentals at least. You know, if you're building a fucking house, it can't have gaping holes in the floors. You got to get the foundations right, man. But look, as long as Walking Dead is serviceable, I kind of love when it's ridiculous and over the top and, you know, makes some leaps in real world logic. For instance, the grenade thing this episode, I think, is fantastic. Like, it's stupid. It would never happen in real life. It's not how anything works, but it was glorious because, like, the fundamentals of what they're doing here aren't bad. They aren't, you know, running through the woods 1 minute during day and the next minute during night and then back to day. It's not like you got to get those basics right and you got to keep things moving, which I think The Walking Dead didn't always do. Seasons 9 and 10, it picked up the pace much more. It got a lot more interesting. Those character moments, like you said, were so much better. So they can do really stupid stuff and I'm still on board and I love ripping into those stupid things. But I also really love watching them. So, like, that's just the schlocky horror stuff that I like, is when they stretch reality a little bit.
Yeah. I think a lot of that brought me down, like, season 7 and 8 was, like, secondhand embarrassment from, like, oh, God, they just don't respect me as a viewer at all.
Yeah.
Which makes me feel bad because I know, like, that was the hell of it. Like, I would listen to, like, Melissa McBride and Chad Coleman, like, spin this whole narrative in their head, like, in an interview where they had, like, filled in all the blanks that the episodes are leaving out. And I'm like, I can tell that they really care about the storytelling emotion. And obviously they have a lot of fun. They, you know, the cast and crew being family is kind of a big trope with The Walking Dead. But like, I just always kind of die a little bit like, man, if 25% of those conversations came to the screen.
Yeah.
But like, I just came to the conclusion that people on top just didn't fucking care, because it's not like, you know, like if your actor's fan fiction that they're talking about over to craft services is better than what's actually making it on the screen, you got a fucking problem. And I just don't feel like that's the case anymore. I feel like if those conversations are happening, Angela's like there with a fucking, you know, a notepad taking notes and being like, oh, yeah, tell me more about this wild, vengeance driven country western woman, Lauren. I would like to know all about this stuff. And we're going to like, but like, they just didn't care. Like, Scott Gimple just was a lazy ass showrunner.
I mean, I guess
and I'll
that's
think that about
is.
Him until he goes and runs a show. Right.
Right.
Because all I heard is he ran The Walking Dead into the ground. He ran Fear the Walking Dead underground when it had a resurgence, and we're all well shot of him.
Yeah, so, I didn't hear it. I saw it. It happened right in front of my eyes.
Exactly.
Walking Dead got really fucking bad in some of those seasons, and we quit watching it. And, you know, Angela Kang, you know, she doesn't come back and make it the best show on television, but she comes back and makes it watchable. And that's what I'm hoping for. Watchable and fun.
Yep. So that's all we got to say about that. Glad to have you back on board, Lisa. Hopefully that we'll all be entertained by it. Because that's the other thing. I just want this last season to be good. There's 24 more episodes of this thing. Give us some closure. I know we're not going to get closure on all the characters because they're spinning off and all that kind of stuff. But like, yeah, let's say something positive or interesting about the world in the last, you know, I've spent, God, over a decade of my life on this thing. Let's make it a little worth it. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's what I'm hoping for anyway. Watching Dead at baldmove.com. Let us know your opinion of this stuff. And like I said, if we get too much of it, we'll spin it off into a whole other podcast. How about that? How about that? We'll just give you more of it. So anyway, watchingdead@baldmove.com is where you send in the feedback. We'll be back next week for the next bonus episode. We're just about 5 weeks away from The Walking Dead being new, for us being caught up on current content. I'm excited. We'll see what happens next week. Until then, I'm Aaron.
And I'm Jim.
Later.